My name is Owen Flynn, and welcome to episode 111 of the Trail Running Ireland podcast. On this week's show, we talk to an athlete who is racking up big finishes at UTMB World Series events one after another, and who has just smashed out a top 10 finish at Istria by UTMB in Croatia. Chris Toner is with us this week, and we also have Rennie Borg from Running Coach Ireland, who will be chatting to us about how terrain impacts our trail running form and how we can recruit different muscle groups. Everybody, get your running gear on. Let's go. Welcome everybody to the show and happy Easter. Before we kick things off, the last IMRA race to report on was the 10.8k race last Sunday as part of the Munster Sunday League. And congrats to Carol Finn, who took the win by just over 2 minutes in the ladies race, and Henry Brown, who got the 10th win of his IMRA career, again by roughly 2 minutes in the men's race. So well done to Carol and to Henry on the IMRA wins there last weekend. And before we call in Rennie for our coaching slot, guys, many thanks to our group of Patreons who support the show each episode with the price of a gel per month. And if you would like to help out the podcast, guys, do please pop over to Patreon, Trail Running Ireland, where you can sign up and help keep us on the airwaves for the rest of 2025. And as a little treat, guys, for our listeners, we've a free entry to the Western Yards, the Connacht Backyard Ultra event in Clarenbridge on May 31st, up for grabs. All you have to do is drop us a PM on Facebook or on Instagram on our social media pages with the answer to the following question. What distance is the loop for the Backyard Ultra? Is it A, 670 metres, B, 6.7 kilometres, or C, 67 kilometres? The competition is open until April 30th, so if you are after an entry for the Western Yards, the Connacht Backyard Ultra event in Clarenbridge on May 31st, you know how to get yourself an entry, guys. Guys, let's keep the show moving and call in our coaching expert about running form on the trails and how to recruit those different muscle groups. Rennie, great to have you back on as usual, mate. Let's jump into today's topic: how terrain impacts trail running form and the way that different muscles are recruited. Rennie, let's start with the basics. What muscle groups are primarily engaged during uphill running?
Yeah, so thanks for having me back as usual, Owen. Uphill running, the toughest part of it. I hope a lot of people will recognize that these are the muscles that burn when they go uphill, because if not, maybe there's something that needs to be adjusted. So it's calves, glutes, and quads. Mm-hmm. And also, a bit surprisingly, I think, to people, your core works harder uphill. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is that, you know, when you're uphill, generally less of your foot can touch the ground, especially when it gets really steep, and then your stabilizers, especially the deep core, they need to work harder. So the steeper the incline, the more the muscles have to work what's called concentrically as well. I think we've touched on that before, Owen, which is basically this idea that we, you know, when you lift, if you lift a bicep curl, a dumbbell slowly, and then you lower it. So when you're lifting it, it's concentric. And I think a lot of people are familiar with that. And when you lower it, it's eccentric. But that's not generally how muscles work in running, which is something we've touched on as well before. They work more what's called isometric plyometric, which is a very fancy word for it. They work more like elastic bands. Mm-hmm. And they're more explosive. So that means the steeper the hill is, the less you can actually work like that. And you're forced to work more like when you do dumbbell curls. And that's a very, very different stimulus than on your muscles. And it tends to be harder on those muscles, and it tends to cause more damage to them.
Okay. Well, I reckon then when you mentioned calves, glutes, and quads, and I reckon my calves and glutes must be okay, because I know I can climb very well. But as I've mentioned a couple of times down at the podcast, I am terrible going downhill. So what about, Rennie, if we flip things around, and what about when we go downhill? What are the key muscles that we engage with going downhill. What do I need to work on?
So that are the aforementioned quads. So then, because they work what's called eccentrically, so as I explained, that is like if people imagine it right here as they're listening. So if you just focus on your bicep for a second and imagine you have something in your hand. So that means there's tension on your muscle, and then you slowly lower your hand with that dumbbell, and you can feel the tension as the bicep gets longer. And that's basically what happens, just really aggressively sped up when you're running downhill, primarily in your big quads. Okay, so they're like the big shock absorbers of downhill. Sometimes you do get a lot of eccentric load in your calves as well, but that's often when you don't have enough function and strength in the bigger muscles like the quads, because they should really be taking most of that. So often, if the calves are getting absolutely hammered on the downhill, it's often a sign that there's a problem somewhere else.
Okay. We've mentioned over the years, Rennie, the importance of running on the flat as well. And it's something that I see when I'm talking to elite athletes, when I'm working at races, that when I'm asking them, what they were doing over the winter time, what they were doing in the build up to certain races, of course they do lots and lots of hours on the hills, but they also do lots of work, speed work on the flat. And I'm just thinking back to Francisco Puppi, who had that fantastic comeback win in the Trans Gran Canaria a couple of weeks ago, where on the flat section over the final 5K, he was like a 5K runner, coming back to take the win in the final 500 meters. So as trail runners, we need to work on the flat as well. What changes on the flat, Rennie? Are we using the different muscle groups? Are we using muscles in a different way as we move down to the flat and get some speed work done in the flat?
Yeah, what got me thinking about this topic was actually it was a conversation that road runners can treat hill running as a form of non-specific cross training. And the argument being made was that when you work on hills up and down, you're stressing your muscles differently. So it's a way to kind of spread the load, just as when you do other forms of cross training. And so it's a way of looking at it. So as we kind of just mentioned, there's a lot more demand both uphill and downhill on hip flexors, stabilizers, core, and all this. And that means if they are very tired, you can actually develop yourself better and more all round by shifting enough to flat terrain. Whereas a road runner would twist this whole thing on its head. They would say, to get a break from all this flat running and the very specific demands of flat running, which we should actually just cover real quick on. So when you run flat, the load on your muscles is very evenly distributed. So that's good, first of all. It means there's less tension. It's a really good way to build really relaxed running form before you go up and down. But your hamstrings work very differently, especially. So we didn't talk a lot about them in up and downhill running because they're not as important there. They're more important in flat running, and they work isometric. But really think of it this way. It means they work like big springs. They don't work like the biceps I just explained. So if you think about your ankle, and if you're sitting at your desk or you're standing right now, if you bring your ankle up to your bum, like bending your knee basically, that would be a concentric hamstring activation. And that's how a lot of people think they need to train the hamstrings, but that's not actually how they work in running. So in running, they work when they're locked together with the calf muscle, stabilizing your hip and your knee. So the way you can imagine that is if you lay down on the stomach now, if you're in the office, don't do it yet, just wait. But you lay down on your stomach and lift up your arms, and then lift up one leg or both legs, but have your ankles and your knees totally straight. So that feeling of that whole back chain locking in together, that's actually how the hamstring does most of its work when you're running on the flat. The glute leads it, but it's the hamstring that's kind of the powerhouse. So you can see if you do all those three things, you get a lovely variation, of the muscular stress in your body. And really, it seems like it could be problematic if, whether you're a road runner or a trail runner, if you take any of these and do them in isolation for too long, because then you're not getting some of the benefits. There was something that, for trail runners, when you put flat intervals and tempo runs and stuff like that in, they help you improve your recovery between climbs, basically. And it's good. So it's good for mixed terrain races for starters. Whereas if you're a road runner who listens sometimes to this podcast and you like what hills are doing for you and you're wondering, like, what is it doing? So hills, Agreed, because you spike lactate a bit without the same level of joint trauma that you get from flat intervals. So that means you can get a lot of the things people are searching for, like better mitochondrial adaptation, lactate shuttle capacity. And you get both a break from pounding asphalt, but you also just you get the internal benefits that you might want without the same level of stress on the legs. And it's a little bit similar to what happens when you, for instance, do, let's say, if you were at the foot of a hill and you did some exercises like some bodyweight squats or some single leg lunges. Let's say you don't have access to a big nasty hill because it's during the week, you're living in a flat town. You could actually simulate running up a steep hill tired by doing a few exercises like that at the bottom of the hill first. And that way you are stressing, you're creating tiredness, but you are stressing your muscular system a little bit more widely than if you're only doing one way of moving, only the uphill run and nothing else. So that's kind of the main value of mixing it up, is you simply will become a better athlete and get a you'll work out more of yourself.
Yeah, I can certainly vouch for that, Rennie. I remember in the early years of my running career when I was a track athlete, and in Gerry Kiernan's group, Gerry introduced me to the hill work as a track athlete, which I'd never done before. And Gerry's group would be doing hill sessions at the back of Marley Park there, Rennie, right up until the end of April, the start of May. And we might be doing it for maybe 6, 7 weeks, just because we could not be training on the track, doing track sessions from, say, post across country in March, April, May, June, July. 5 months of sessions on the track is just not sustainable. You're just asking for an injury. But if you break that up and throw in maybe 5 to 6 weeks of hill work, on that beautiful stretch of trails at Kilmashogue Park there, Kilmashogue to Kilmashogue Forest area. Beautiful place to train. And it just got us so strong. And therefore, Gerry's group was fantastic at peaking at the end of July, start of August, because they were only moving on to the track in maybe mid-May into June, and just got that perfect balance between that strength work on the hills, injury-proofing the body, and then doing the explosive fast stuff on the track. It's a lovely way to do it. And I have a lot of athletes now, Rennie, that are actually, say, coming off a spring marathon or coming off their spring racing goals. And we've got a long way to go to Dublin, for example. We've got lots of summer road races to look forward to, but I'm going to get a lot of them onto the hills for 4 or 5 weeks, just so we're not doing road sessions from here till October. It's just far too long. So to do those hill reps, if you are on the flat for this year, around this time, it's a lovely way to do it. Let's bring it back to the training for our hill athletes and our trail athletes, Rennie. What are some of the best way that trail runners can train these terrain-specific muscle groups? Is it going to the gym and doing the traditional type of strength work, or is there another better way to do it?
Generally, people have moved away from the old school, where it's just a lot of kind of heavy and often two-legged exercises, and even things like calf raises and static lunges, which if you don't overdo it, they can have value. But when you are doing exercises that isolate one of these muscles, that works best when it's just for rehab or when you have had identified by a professional that one of your muscles, maybe, let's say you've had an injury in a calf, so it's very underdeveloped, then it could be worth just bringing that one muscle up to scratch, kind of. But generally, it's more functional strength what you're looking for today, where that happens in multiple planes of motions. For instance, what they call a multi-planar lunge with rotation, right? So that'd be you take a step forward, maybe you're holding a medicine ball, and as your step comes forward, you rotate towards that lead leg, similar to how in running, the one shoulder moves across to kind of meet the front knee, right? So you're trying to implement all three planes of motion, including that rotation around the hip. Single leg hops and other simple plyometric work would be very specific, once you have that foundation. And any type of movement where you feel like you're challenging your stability and your coordination, because you can't actually have a lot of power if you have poor stability and coordination, because it's like shooting a, it's like shooting a cannon from a canoe, as they used to say. That just doesn't work. You need a stable foundation, good coordination, and then you can add power into your exercises. So as we've mentioned various thinkers on this, you know, like Franz Bosch, that some people might know, there's functional patterns, there's multiple systems, even like the simple dynamic runner subscription that a lot of people follow now, you know, there's a lot of, most of those exercises are quite functional. And they try to work a lot of the muscles together that you use when you're running. So that's kind of where it's gone for most people.
Yeah, so I mean, we really need to stay away from the heavy lifting, because the heavy lifting can often dampen that functional strength work that we need, that plyometric energy that we need. If we're lifting just big weights all the time, it might necessarily stand to us on the trails.
No, heavy lifting can help you create new muscle fibers if you maybe have lost a lot, you know, so it could maybe be workable, let's say, straight after an ultra and kind of a rebuild period, just because maybe you think, well, actually, I lost a lot of muscle mass during this 300K race or whatever. I want to build some. It can be valuable then. But generally, if you do heavy and slow, it brings your muscle into that contractive slow reaction state. And you don't need that brute strength. You need elasticity. You know, you need to feel springy. So you're bound over rocks. You know, Lydia used to say you need the strength of a deer, not of a bull. You know, although a bull can run pretty fast, but a deer is kind of the image that you want to have in your head. So too much heavy lifting can dampen, especially athletes who are naturally elastic. That's an experience people have. So if you're kind of a little bit wiry and springy, you could be making yourself worse without knowing it. So you are better off with plyometrics, isometric holds, you know, and if people don't know what isometrics is, you know, so it's when a very, very simple example to demonstrate is if you go and stand on one leg and you lift your left leg up and put your right arm down on your quad, then press with the hand into the quad and press your quad into the hand as hard as you can. That's an isometric contraction or an isometric hold.
So that's
very good stuff, because a lot of the muscles work like that in running. You know, so it's a great way, and it's very safe because you are working a very limited range of motion. So it's also a great entry point to resistance training if you've been away for a long time from that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I suppose, Randy, a key thing that when we are trying to recruit different muscle groups and get stronger, get more flexible, get more powerful, get more elastic, it's to avoid the common mistake that a lot of runners make, and that's that we can get very used to doing the same thing all the time, falling into our habit of doing the same route, the same flat section, or the same climb every weekend, or whatever it might be. And I think it's about making sure that we avoid overemphasizing one terrain.
Yeah, because if all you do is like big hills, a bit like what Billy Bland did, you know, then you get really, really strong. But you might lose elasticity and muscular balance. You know, this could be one trade-off, and there are more, of course. And that then means you might win something, but you could still lose race performance. So, you know, if all you do is the kind of very slow vertical slogs every single day, then the moment you go on any kind of flat, you might lose the bounce. And I've experienced that many times. You know, when I do blocks of what people used to call block periodization, you know, where you do one type of training very heavily for a period. I noticed I got super strong on steep hills, you know, and then whenever I hit a flat, it was so hard, you know. And similarly, if all you do is flat tempo and then you jump into the hills, you probably will feel the downhills, you know, punish you too much. You get a lot of eccentric damage. So you have to mix it. And obviously, then you just emphasize a little bit extra what you need soon.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier on, Rennie, Steve Magnus, and he had a great insight about lactate recycling and hill running. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah. So basically, he's saying that for road and track runners, if they do hill sprints and steep reps, it's a really safe way for them to generate really high lactate without the same level of pounding as in track flat intervals, as we mentioned a little bit earlier there. So that means you can practice that, what is called the lactate shuttle, you know, so your body learns to use lactate as a fuel, which is great. It's a really high powered fuel. It's an extra fuel, which means you need less sugar and things like that. But you have to work at a fairly high intensity to get it up in your bloodstream. And so if we say, well, look, but we're trail runners, we're not road runners, you just flip it. So that means if you're generating a lot of lactate in races when you climb and you do technical effort, your issue is not producing lactate, because you can do that easily on a hill. You don't have to run very fast. You're producing a lot of lactate. You have to learn how to clear it. And it's really hard to do that if you're just out on the hill. So he's basically saying, if you reverse this logic Trail runners could benefit from flat, steady state running. Just add, the lactate threshold to teach the body to clear lactate. So basically, threshold work on the flat could be really helpful in teaching your body to clear the extra lactate you produce on the climb. And that'll make you, the way you would feel it if you do it right, is you'll recover quicker between the climbs, and you'll probably be able to push a higher sustained speed as well.
I think the key message from today, Rennie, is if you want to develop muscle recruitment and develop strength and so on, and even though a lot of our listeners, a lot of their key races might be 90% on the hills, hill runners can borrow a lot from road runners, and likewise, road runners can borrow a lot from trail runners and hill runners. And by using the knowledge from both spheres, we can all be better runners, I think, at the end of the day, and that we don't have to be just training on the hills all year long, nor just training on the roads all year long.
No, it seems like for the vast majority of people, the balance is best, because I know any people who have followed sport for a long time, you can think of a few examples where there were some who took them to extremes, like as a Colin Donnelly, 300 meters minimum vertical every day, very, very successful. But it could be very specific reasons why that approach worked for him.
Yeah.
But I think if most people start from a balanced approach, and you only do like only hills in very specific blocks. Let's say you're training for a 100 mile big race and you go away. I have a client going away to Lavaredo because they're doing the Lavaredo 100 miler and they're going to spend a week in the mountains. But that's not every week. Most of the time there's one or two hill sessions and then the rest is flat. So the body actually has a chance to recover. But if you are in doubt of where your balance is, because people have different tolerances to different terrains, they might have different levels of muscular strength, maybe a different running style that means they don't get as much punishment, when they run up and down. So you what you would look for is really the state of your muscular system. So try and actually, if you're in doubt of what's the right rhythm for you, is it one, is it two hill sessions a week, versus three flat, whatever it is, just try and monitor. How you seem to respond when you play around with those ratios. And then hopefully you'll hit a sweet spot that can serve you for the rest of your career as kind of your baseline standard week.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll tell you, a race where the hills and the roads combine, Rennie, is of course your own Glendalough Lap of the Gap, which I think you're race director for this year again. And that's creeping up soon as Rennie now as well towards the end of May. How are things going for that? And are there any race entries available for anybody that might to combine the beautiful terrain and sights around the Glendalough area with some road speed maybe as well?
Yeah, well, that's an obvious race where you definitely need both. And it is coming up 24th of May, if I can give a little plug. Yeah, we're actually looking for record numbers. So the marathon should sell out before race day because we are trying to keep that at a reasonable level. And so there still are some tickets to be got. But that's a good example, definitely, where because that's a lot of the road runners who come into that, they are really keen to get advice on how to handle the hills.
Certainly.
And what it means, because it is a race that actually has some fairly good flat stretches in between as well. Because when you look at a profile of a race, because it's always so squashed on the horizontal axis, it looks like it's all up and down. But if you actually stretch it out, there is plenty of flat sections where you need to be able to still keep up a good pace. So the trail runners would have the opposite problem with a race like that. They will come in with plenty of hill strength, but they should probably get, as I say, some lactate thresholds, flat training done so that in between the ups and downs where they're strong, they can keep a decent cruising pace. And it's no different than a lot of the friendlier trail races we have in Wicklow. There are some nasty sections of flat fire road that get to a lot of the real purist hill runners. They curse those sections as the track runners fly past.
Well, listen, Rene, brilliant as always. A masterclass, I think, today in how terrain and physiology intersect. So, Rennie, thanks a million for being on the show again, mate.
My pleasure, Owen, and talk to you in a few weeks.
Take care. Talk soon.
All right. Bye.
Our special guest this week has just smashed out a top 10 at the Istria 100 miler by UTMB, as well as a host of impressive ultra runs over the last few years, meticulously building up towards the big challenges step by step. And he's one of Rene's athletes as well from Running Coach Ireland. So I'm really looking forward to this one myself. Chris Toner, Chris, great to have you on the show. After some spectacular photographs were coming through over the weekend of a superb top 10 in the Istria 100 by UTMB. Chris, I'm sure you must be exhausted, but over the moon.
Oh yeah, delighted. Hey, I suppose just coming around to myself there now. The exhaustion is starting to wear off, but that was a great weekend now, definitely.
Yeah. Chris, what was it that made you choose the Istria race in Croatia? Was it a race that just suited from a calendar point of view, or did you like the look of it, or what?
I suppose kind of the last couple of years, because I've only been kind of running maybe 2 or 3 years now, but I've tried to get one early in the season, and the last 2 years I've done Chianti, which was always around the time of the Morris Mullins, actually the same weekend. So I says, right, I'll maybe try and get something that I could maybe chance the Morris Mullins as well. So this one, Istria, then kind of come into the calendar. And so kind of basically from that. And then I seen a few Irish ones out last year. You had Ricky and Julie McNamee and them out last year doing, and it looked pretty good. Like, so I says, we'll give it a go.
You've come from a very sporting background, Chris. I think played a lot of football up in Donegal there, and I'm amazed. I didn't realise that you're only actually running about 2 years, but yeah. It's been a fantastic 2 years of you know, lots of good finishes at big, hard, challenging races, and you know, in the ultra running world, so many things can go wrong, Chris. But you seem to have a knack of, you know, finishing Eco Trail Wicklow, finishing Seven Sisters, finishing the Verbier race, finishing UTMB. There's not many DNFs there, which you do see with runners of that profile, that not all of these big trail races go so well. And yeah, you seem to have planned your races very, very well in terms of building up towards the big ones and not just jumping in at the deep end. I know there's a lot of stuff there in that question. I'm trying to just formulate what is question, Chris, but I suppose, yeah, what do you put your success down to in to attack these big races so early in your career?
Well, I suppose I just kind of determination's the big one, and the DNFs, I don't really want to think about a DNF. I just want to get finished, no matter how bad or how tough a thing gets. I think you can always finish it if you put your head to it. Like, even going back to Eco Trail there back last September, it was only 3 weeks after UTMB, and God, I was about halfway through going great, and then all of a sudden, how the body kind of was more humbled than anything. It just, and I says, well, anyway, I'm not giving in, and I basically walked for the last second part of the race, and it meant more to me finishing that race than kind of than anything, that you had the head to actually get it finished, you know, when everything was going wrong, like, you know. So more determination than anything, like, you know.
Yeah, is that something, Chris, that you always had as an athlete on the football pitch as well, or is it something that you've maybe discovered about yourself as an ultra runner?
No, I think when I did play the soccer and stuff, that was part of my game, was the kind of relentlessness or whatever, of never giving up, and, you know, going to the last. Actually, like, thinking back, I was always nearly stronger in the second part of a game, or the second half of a game, you know, finishing strong was the same, to just get that extra boost. And it's kind of, even like, and out of them races, I seem to, as the races go longer and longer, I seem to be stronger near the end of the race than the beginning of the race for some reason. But that's just, I suppose, maybe back to the determination again, just to get it finished.
Yeah. With the race there last weekend, Chris, did you have any expectation of attacking, you know, a top 10 and coming 8 out of 369 athletes? And I suppose if anybody does look at your racing results over the last couple of years, it nearly does suggest that there was a big result coming, because you're finishing all these races, top 20% in UTMB in Mont Blanc, top 20% in a very difficult CDH in Val d'Aran, and now a top 10 in Istria. What were your expectations going into Istria? Was it just to get through it okay, or did you have your eye on the prize and potentially top 10?
Yeah, I never kind of thought of a top 10, but I knew there was a good Finnish in me, but I suppose I never doubted myself that I hadn't that I couldn't. No, push hard. I knew I'm not at the level of some of them athletes, but I think on your day you can push yourself to close to them. Like, so it's more just keep going and see where it takes you. Like.
Yeah, it was a great second half of the race where you moved through the field, Chris, so well.
Yeah.
I presume that meant that your training went very, very well in the weeks and months leading up to it. You had a great fourth place in the 71K Sleek Corky Ultra as well. I'm sure that gave you a great confidence boost. What do you put that strong second half surge into the top 10 down to Chris? Is it just really good preparation combined with that determination that we're talking about?
I would say, yeah, it was. I do put on a lot of hours, and I like good long runs at the weekends there. So I think that definitely stands to you at the end of the race. But now I didn't feel as if I had a real strong finish. It just seemed to happen that way. I actually tried to put the pressure down at the start of the race because I knew through the night, that I would maybe gain a few spots. But it just seemed to happen that well, I was catching people or other people were dropping off, but and I mean just one particular, I went down to an aid station and there was two lads had just went in before me, and I mean looking at them and they were buggered, like, and I was thinking, God, and I looked up, there was a leaderboard and it was a bit surreal. I was thinking, how am I here? And look at these two lads that are maybe higher up on UTM index than myself, and here's them buggered, and I'm in good form. Like, so that gave me a bit of a confidence to push on then after that. So, and then gradually you started to pick off a few more places, like,
Yeah. It's a great lesson, isn't it, about ultra racing, that if you can just stay in the fight, if you can stay in the game, other people around you will drop out or they'll slow down at a lot worse pace than you will.
Well, that was something I heard last year from Rennie. Actually, Rennie coaches me and has been a great help. And I mean, I'm saying it was the time of Valderan, and it was just before it. And he says, just remember in the second part of the race that everyone slows down. As long as your percentage is a bit less than the others, you will pick off. And that seems to happen. Like, there's no truer words than that. Like,
You mentioned there just you enjoy your long runs at the weekend, Chris. And for people listening in that, are maybe preparing their first ultra, what do those training weekends look like? Is it just one day on a Saturday of a big long day out in the mountains, or are you doing, say, back-to-back long runs on a Saturday and a Sunday as well? Because whatever you're doing, it's working really, really well.
Well, it probably is most Saturdays and Sundays. Like, I would get out early, obviously with a busy schedule at home with kids and stuff. You need to get out early in the morning, Saturday and Sunday. So maybe getting out 3 4 hours maybe on a Saturday, and possibly maybe the same on a Sunday, but you're
Okay.
back home early then, so.
Yeah. Do you do any type of speed work at all with your training with Rene, Chris? Like any type of interval work, tempo work, or because you're pretty much now an ultra specialist, you might say, is it all lots of zone two work, lots of long days in the mountains?
No, I do. We do a bit, maybe kind of midweek stuff, maybe like strides and hill sprints and stuff, and that I find that definitely works, and that's where the bit of coaching did, I think, improved me a lot. I was doing everything 100 miles an hour for the first year of running or whatever, and you were getting on good and you were seeing improvements, but it was just slow improvement. You just needed that bit of extra coaching, and it made it more enjoyable as well with your speed work and stuff, so.
Yeah, just so you're not stuck at the one pace every day to work. Yeah, absolutely. Did you get a chance to go up on the podium, Chris, to collect your third place in the overall?
No, sure. I was flying back out of Croatia or Italy on the early hours of Sunday morning, so I didn't get to hang around. We're back at work on Monday, so there's no time
Okay.
to hang around. So, but no, it's a pity because it would have been nice to be in there, but
Yeah.
maybe next time.
Next time, yeah, well, listen, you still have your medal, you still have your result. Tell us about the race itself. Again, for anybody that might be thinking of going there next year, because what type of mountain range is it? Is it very rocky? Is it very steep climbing, steep descending? How would you describe it? What was it? Was it spectacular?
Yeah, well, the race actually started at 5 o'clock in the evening, and there's a couple of big climbs as it was getting dark and into the dark, which was a pity because I would say the scenery would have been unbelievable. But the terrain was as hard a terrain I've ever run on. It was very rocky, and in fact, for the last like the last maybe 70, 80 k of the race that I've done, I had real bother with my left Achilles, and I put that down to just the terrain being so rocky, like, you know, and you felt every step. It was runnable, but it was just very, it was quite, I suppose, dangerous. But if you kind of just watch yourself, you're grand. But it definitely, if anyone was thinking about doing it, they would need to kind of train in that kind of a terrain before they would go, because it was really hard, you know. So.
Yeah, Chris, you've been to so many of these big UTMB races now. It's a fantastic CV. As I said there a couple of moments ago, UTMB Mont Blanc, UTMB Val d'Aran, the big one in the north of Spain, Trail Vert Blair. Sorry, and Ultra Trail Snowdonia as well back in 2020.
That was one of the first ones. Yeah, that was the first, I think, race that I did do. Bar had done the 30 k Seven Sisters, and a month later I said, "What's this? I've never heard tell of UTMB until I started to kind of do the run." And I said, "What's this all about?" So I knew then you needed running stones and stuff to get into UTMB. So I had it in my head from the very beginning that I wanted to do the UTMB, and it was best case that you could get there in 2 years. So Snowdonia was the first of it, but it was probably the toughest race I've ever done. Even though it was only 50 k, it was brutal. Like, you know, I was just wasn't used to it. Like, you know, that kind of a race.
Well, I was going to ask you, Chris. I'm sure each one is special in their own right, but and maybe the obvious answer to the question is UTMB Mont Blanc. But is there any of those UTMB races that stands out as your favorite, whether it's from a result point of view, just how beautiful the mountain ranges are, really good organization. Which one stands out, and maybe which ones don't stand out as ones that you definitely wouldn't be back to?
Well, the one, the Verbier in the Alps in Switzerland back, was it 2 years ago? Like, that was just a spectacular. We were there for the week actually, and it was good. I had my parents and two of my girls, the daughters, with me, and just to experience that for a week, and you know, up in the mountains, it's just something we've never done before. So the lead up to it was great, and then to get into the race itself, then it was just on a different level from kind of anything that I've ever done. Now I started in wave three in the race, so it was a bit. But hard to get through. I mean, having there was maybe 1,000 people on the track in front of us, single trail, and you had to try and get past as many as you can. So it was quite exhausting, but it was well worth it in the end, like, you know.
UTMB Mont Blanc, Chamonix. I'm sure spectacular memories from that, Chris, as
Oh,
well.
unbelievable! How the start line there is just Jesus. It's just crazy. You can't take it all in. You know, it's unbelievable what kind of buzz you get out of that at the start, and even for that first 7 or 8 k out of Chamonix, like, and you've loads and lines of people each side of the road cheering you on. Like, it's just unbelievable.
And then getting back to the finish line, I suspect, is very special as well.
Oh,
Because
that's what I do.
pretty
Yeah.
close, you know, you can easily have a dropout rate at 25, 30, even 35%. So
Yeah.
to do it like you did and come in that top 20%, I'm sure those
Yeah.
last couple of kilometers coming into Chamonix must have been
Oh,
special.
it was sweet coming down that last descent. I know it took for ages to get down, but by God, when you get down, how the you just it was just great how to get over the line and see the family at the finish line, a couple of mates now. It was brilliant.
And to do these races, Chris, you know, you're not out there on your own. I know you do have a support crew with you, whether it's the family, or I think what friend Danny might have been out with you last weekend as well. Important to have buy-in from the family and a couple of mates out supporting you.
No, of course, it makes all the difference as well. Because, like, even out in Istria, when things were getting tough in the last 50 k, you were getting text messages, or they might have been ringing you. So the person so far behind you, you're getting on well. You know, just that wee extra boost to keep you going. It does help. Like, and you knowing that you have people at the finish line waiting on you, that you don't want to be letting anybody down. So you just push on. Like, so.
How's the recovery going, Chris? Are you doing anything special this week to help with the recovery, or are you just on the couch chilling out?
Oh, I watched those on the couch. Work's quite busy at the minute, so I'll just straight back to work on Monday. But now, as far as I'm lucky that I do recover quite well. The only issue I have at the minute, as I say, is the Achilles. That my foot kind of was all swollen up there, but it's actually improving there now today.
Okay,
Going
good,
through the plan. So, but no, other than that, like I just drink plenty of fluids and eat plenty. Have serious appetite. I would eat anything at the minute, like you
Factor,
know. But,
the calorie deficit over the weekend, absolutely. And the ultra adventure, Chris, it continues. You've done so much, but you've already got, I think, two more races lined up for this year. If I'm not mistaken, back to Chamonix and the slightly trickier, more technical TDS.
Well, so I was unlucky not to get into the UTMB again with the lottery, I suppose, where I was lucky last year on the first time. So whenever I didn't get the interest, it's right, TDS, because I've heard so much about it as well from different people that it is a more technical and maybe even a tougher race. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to that as well. So
And then Andorra, UTMB Andorra as a little warm up.
yeah, so I think Andorra has quite a bit of elevation for a shorter race, and kind of been chatting to Rennie and all kind of for planning ahead. We thought it was a good one to try, and you have a bit of altitude. So yeah, I'll see how that goes. That might be a wee bit more difficult than Istria, but we'll give it a go anyway.
Just maybe one of the final questions, Chris, is that you seem to have a massive love for the mountains and for the ultra races. What is it about these type of races that you do love? You're from a sporty background and busy life with work and with four kids like myself. I'm sure it's go. And I'm sure the trails and the mountains just give you a chance, maybe a bit of downtime for yourself, a bit of breathing space for yourself. And what is it about the ultra trail running world that you love and that motivates you so much just to keep on going again and going again?
Well, one of the big things is you already in the last couple, you meet so many people, like-minded people, like, and just everyone's so friendly and helpful. And even like as me starting out, I don't be afraid to maybe contact people that has done some of these races, or you know, seeing social media, and everybody helps you out in any way they can. I just find when you get out there, it's just something about being out in the hills, and even when you're out on your own, no one in the area, you're in your own little world. I just it's just great, you know.
Fantastic. Well, Chris, it's been great to talk to you today. Great to get a little insight into that top 10 run in Istria at 100. I'm sure, mate, you're absolutely delighted with it. And I'm sure social media has been very busy for you with people commenting on the great photographs that we were looking at there over the weekend. Chris, this is all done. Super, super, super run. And thank you for taking a couple of minutes out of your busy
No,
schedule.
and thanks for having me on there.
Hello.
I've been, as I say, I've been following you there now for the last couple of years, and considering some of the level of guests you're on, I really appreciate you having me on. So,
I know, a pleasure to talk to you, Chris. Listen, Chris, well done. Best of luck with the recovery. Hopefully that Achilles calms down very quickly. And looking forward to maybe a couple more top 10 UTMB results over the next couple of years, mate. Fair play.
Fingers crossed. All right, bye bye. See you.
Thanks, Chris. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye bye bye.
Well, there we have it, guys. That's a wrap for this week. Thanks to Rennie for his contribution, as always, and to Chris for dialing in from Donegal. For now, guys, enjoy the miles, enjoy the mountains. Do pop over to Patreon when you have a moment for simply €3 a month. That will help keep us on the airwaves coming to you this year. And don't forget our competition as well for the Western Yards, the Connacht Backyard Ultra. We had our details, our question earlier on in the show. Good luck with that one, guys, if you're entering. Good luck with your training. Enjoy Easter time. Enjoy those chocolate eggs. Everybody, get your running gear on. Let's go.